from the birthplace of radio's greatest era. Now, from New York, it's Radio Night Live with Kevin McCullough. Unlike anything else on radio today, it's a front row seat for great information with today's leading experts. The Millionaire Maker, Hillary Kramer, Travel with Valerie Delia, Nicole Sapphire, MD, Senior Medical Contributor to Fox News Channel, and Physician at Memorial Sloan Kettering Medical Center. Legal expertise by Arthur Idala, Attorney to the Stars, and Christine Nicholas, the quintessential heartbeat of New York hospitality. All joining legendary broadcast pro Kevin McCullough on a mission unlike any other, united to bring back New York. And now, live from Studio 111, here's Kevin McCullough.
Well, welcome aboard. It's Thursday, and man, is it going to be a busy show tonight. It is legal night. We have got a ton of stuff to get to, lots of cases to talk about, not the least of which is that very strange and continues to grow in mystery by the minute Petito case. We will get into that before we are very far along in the show tonight. But Arthur Idala is back with us, and Arthur, always good to see you. Busy day these days for the legal commentariat. You guys are all over television because of all these big high-profile cases that are going on.
Yeah. Hey, Kevin, how are you? And good evening, everybody. Yeah, it's been a busy day. I did a little Fox 5 with Rosanna Scotto. I did it's called a new show on News Nation called The Donlan Report, which is it's actually a pretty good show. And I've been doing a bunch of radio. And the Petito case is definitely interesting. I did Megyn Kelly's. She's got a new show out there, and I did her podcast today. You know, Kevin, I will tell you this, though, and this is not typically what you and I speak about, but it is interesting, of the thousands of missing persons a year, it's always the attractive young white women
well,
that we always focus
when
on.
We get into this discussion, I got to ask you about that, because Joy Reid said something on MSNBC this week that kind of raised eyebrows, but I'm not sure that she's factually wrong. Before we get to that, though, let me delve into some breaking news from this afternoon. In Tennessee, we had another one of these shootings, mass shootings. A gunman walked into a Kroger grocery store, and people from the South that are familiar with Krogers, you know how much they're loved in the South. A horrific shooting where he walks in around 1:30 in the afternoon and just starts firing at people. And as always is the case, it took many, many, many minutes later for the SWAT teams to get there. They went aisle to aisle, room to room, looking for victims and for the shooter. They eventually did find that the shooter had acted alone, turned the weapon on himself, and killed one other person, 12 people taken to the hospital. But, Arthur, it's the same thing every time. These things always happen in places where they have a group of people that are just sitting ducks. People that are basically, here it's just a bunch of people doing their grocery shopping. And for whatever reason, and who knows what his motivation was, I'm sure the police will dig into his social media and other things and try to find out what it was. But what a horrible beginning to the week, particularly for the one victim that died and for the 12 that, you know, will be forever traumatized by what they experienced.
And, you know, we hear about these things way too often, Kevin. And obviously our hearts and condolences go out to the family of the one person who, you know, is shopping in a store and is now dead. I mean, it just shows you how fast life happens and can end. And I mean, there's 12 other people. We don't know how critically injured they are. And, you know, God bless law enforcement for going there. But I bet you when, as you said, they'll do their investigation, they'll look into who this person is. It always ends up, in my opinion, with some sort of mental illness. I mean, I just don't think that, you know, people come out of the womb naturally evil. I think the way you could break an arm, you could break a leg, I think you could break a brain. And unfortunately, walking around Midtown Manhattan, I see a lot of those people, and you just hope that their mental illness does not cause harm or in this case death to another person. But I don't know what we can do to prevent these things. And who knows what the motivation is here? I mean, I've never heard of this grocery store, but I understand this store. What type of a store is it? The Kroger?
Oh, Kroger's a huge chain all throughout the South. I would say from Virginia all the way down to Florida and then all the way across pretty much to California. But they're a huge southern
grocery.
Is it like
a Target? Is it what kind of
a? No, it's like a Stop and Shop or okay. It's a major grocery chain.
So basically some poor person went grocery food shopping for their family and they're now dead. I mean,
yeah,
it's unfathomable. And, I know people are going to say, well, that's why everyone should carry a gun. And, you know, this will come to a gun control conversation. And just to be clear, my position on gun control is it should be a local decision as much as possible, at the very least a state by state decision, if not a city by city decision, because, you know, as you said, it took X amount of time for law enforcement to show up. I know at one point the response time in New York City for law enforcement to show up was like under 5 minutes. Now, I know 4 minutes will seem like an eternity if some lunatic.
Yeah, if the shootout happens in a minute and a half,
right.
6 minutes,
I got you.
Cop ride is a long time.
If you're in Utah, where things are so spread out, in Wyoming, where the response time is 20 minutes, well, then I think you should have a different set of laws than if you're in downtown Brooklyn, where the response time is 3 or 4 minutes. But with all of that being said, someone having a gun there is what stops the problem. How do we end the problem? How do we prevent the problem from beginning in the first place? Right. How do we stop these mass shootings? And you know what? It's not a Democratic issue. It's not a Republican issue, because there were a ton of these mass shootings under President Obama. There were shootings under President Bush. There were shootings under President Trump. So it's not a blue or a red issue.
No, and I don't think in Tennessee. I think Tennessee's a pretty I would guess, if I had to, and I don't know the law specifically, but I would guess that they're a more open gun state, certainly than New Jersey or New York. But what you're describing there, Arthur, is the very reason why I'm actively getting as many concealed carries in as many different states as I possibly can. I don't want to be caught in the middle of something going down where I feel helpless and defenseless myself. And I think
let me throw a wild card at you, Kevin. So okay. God forbid you're in that situation.
Right.
And you take out your concealed weapon and you're going to get the shooter and you wind up killing two other people who are not the shooter. A woman and her daughter in the carriage because you missed.
But that's why in order to get those concealed permits, you go through extensive training. Like, I mean, and I don't think you should just give, you know, kids guns, but you got to spend time. You got to know how to use it. But we need more people that are capable of defending the mass public than just the cops, because especially in years like the last couple that we've had here, man, has it been hard with all the violence and the rise in crime in different ways. And good people with guns are often the ones that stop the bad people with guns, whether they be in uniform or not.
The way we compensate here in New York City is it's not just the police officers, right? It's the police officers who have a weapon on them. Correction officers have a weapon on them. Court officers have a weapon on them.
Yeah.
The retired police officers have a weapon on them.
And so good guys that get concealed carry.
And then it's
all two of them.
It's going to be real hard to get a concealed carry in New York City if you're applying for a brand new license at this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, but again, going back to where did the problem start? How did this human being have a gun on him in the first place?
That's what authorities will be ferreting out. They'll figure out the gun that was involved. And the amazing thing about ballistics is that they can tell you the whole history of where that firearm's been. We're coming right back. It's Legal Night. We weren't going to talk a lot about this, but we've got some big cases to get into, and we'll jump off, you know, right when we get back. Stay with us. It's Radio Night Live.
Listen to us online at am970theanswer.com. Tune in, iHeart, Alexa, or Odyssey.com.
As you know, our friend Mike Lindell has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of your life. He didn't stop by simply creating the best pillow. Now Mike has done it again by introducing his new My Slippers. Mike has taken over 2 years to develop. My Slippers are designed to wear indoor and out all day long, made with MyPillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue, made with quality leather suede. For a limited time, Mike is offering 50% off his new My Slippers. slippers. The My Slippers are so comfortable that you'll want to get some for the whole family. 800-651-0798. Use that promo code JOEP or go to MyPillow.com. Click on the radio listener square and use the promo code JOEP. You will also get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the Giza Dream Bed Sheets, the MyPillow Mattress Topper, and MyPillow Towel Sets. 800-651-0798. Promo code JOEP.
Charlie Kirk believes we're seeing the decline of America.
Right now, there are hundreds of people that run your country, run our military, run our government, that are kind of like, what's the big deal if we lose? Who cares if it's humiliating? What's important is whether or not we get paid. What's important is whether or not my child goes to Harvard. I mean, we do that all the time. That's all we've done is lose over the last 30 years. And we get promoted while doing it.
The Charlie Kirk Podcast, available on SalemPodcastNetwork.com and everywhere podcasts are heard.
My doctor told me my blood pressure is borderline. I figured I could worry about it or do something about it. So I took control with Garlic Healthy Blood Pressure Formula. It works safely and naturally to help maintain healthy blood pressure with a custom blend of garlic, vitamins, and minerals. And it's odor-free. I'm taking charge with Garlic Healthy Blood Pressure Formula.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The term natural references only the garlic in the product. Use as directed.
Hi, I'm Kevin McCullough. There are people that live in all kinds of circumstances, and sometimes the houses we have or the homes that we have inherited or can't seem to service anymore, they become bigger headaches than they're worth. That's why my good friends Sean and George at Swift Homebuyers are ready to help you now. They'll pay cash for your house. It doesn't matter what kind it is. Could be vacant, could be left over from a divorce, a junk house that needs thousands in repairs. They'll buy a house in any condition at any price. Cash for probate, inherited houses, houses where you have renters that won't pay their rent. Sean and George and Swift Homebuyers are Christians and they are a family-owned real estate business. Call them today and find out what you can get from them for your house that's given you this headache. 732-800-4020. They'll buy houses in any condition and they'll pay cash. Kevin McCullough, I trust Swift Homebuyers to get the cash out of your home that you need. I think you should give them a call. 732-800-4020. That's 732-800-4020.
Listen to us online at am970theanswer.com. Tune in, iHeart, Alexa, or Odyssey.com.
Ben Shapiro sees more overreaction from the left.
CNN reports today, quote, "A rock that students call a symbol of racism has been removed from University of Wisconsin. And now they spent, I kid you not, $50,000 to remove a 42-ton boulder for no reason other than apparently students of color at the University of Wisconsin are offended by a rock that is not racist because it's a rock that is not racist."
The Ben Shapiro Show, weeknights at 5 and 9 on AM 970. The Answer.
Our hosts all look like GQ models. See them now at am970theanswer.com.
And now, from New York, back to Radio Night Live. Here's Kevin McCullough.
Well, welcome back to Radio Night Live. It's Thursday night. That means Arthur and I get to hang out for the full hour and talk about all the big cases of the day. And Arthur, I hope you're not tired of doing Gabby Petito coverage because you've got your own show to do now to cover it. But
I kind of know the facts inside and out at this point, Kevin.
In the breakdown of the last 24 hours or so, there's a lot of things that are kind of coming to the surface. For one thing, we have no idea where Brian Laundry is, where he went. He may not have ever even come home. They're starting to posture at this point. What's your best guess as to what we're looking at there?
Well, what I scratch my head about, Kevin, is how was he able to slip away if he was home? In other words, how is a law enforcement not looking at him? How are they not tracking him? Even if they don't have an arrest warrant, why are they not sitting on his house? I mean, that's like...
Okay, I do have a question for you as the authority on law here. So he comes back from the trip. They don't have a body, so they can't charge him with anything, right? So where does the legality for the cops to begin to surveil him begin when you don't have a victim? And then we see all these headlines. Oh, they're starting to search around. Oh, they're in the area where they last were. And then boom, he disappears. I think he knew exactly they were going to find the body.
Listen, they can't walk into his house. They can't walk into his garage. They can't arrest him. But when he's out in the public, they're allowed to track him. They're allowed to trail him 100%. They're allowed to know his whereabouts. He is a quote-unquote person of interest. They can't talk to him. He lawyered up. They know that they can't talk to him. So that's what I was scratching my head when they're searching the lagoons and the swamps and they're fighting off crocodiles and snakes. I'm saying, and what happens if they find him? Then now what do they do? I haven't heard that they have an arrest warrant. I haven't heard what a cause of death is. All the coroner said is it was death by homicide. Homicide typically means, first of all, it's like not natural causes. So she didn't die of an aneurysm, a heart attack, or stroke.
I'm guessing blunt force trauma or something like that.
It could be more than that, right? I mean, it could be a stab wound. It could be a bullet wound. But even if it's any of those things, that does not necessarily tell you who did it, right? If it's a stab wound or a bullet wound. Okay, she died by stabbing. She died by... Now that you have to take the next step, how do we know this guy is the one who did it? There's that big video of her crying. They had a big fight. How do we know that he didn't just leave her on the side of the road and somebody else did?
Yeah.
So there's a ton of questions. Obviously, everybody is waiting and looking to hear from the coroner's office what was the cause of death and what are the forensics showing to see if anything points to him. But at this point, Kevin, if he walked into this precinct and surrendered, I don't think they have enough, even based on circumstantial evidence, to make an arrest.
What do you think about the fact? Does he taking flight at the moment that he did seem to indicate anything?
Well, it seemed from a commonsensical point of view and a layperson's point of view, yes, it's what would be called consciousness of guilt. He seems to be coming off of somebody who's not an innocent person, because if there was an innocent explanation, you would think his lawyer would say, okay, that's an innocent explanation. Let's go in and talk to the FBI about it. But the fact that he fled, you know, in the world I live in, that you call that a consciousness of guilt.
Right.
And if he's ever charged, the judge would have to make a decision of whether that's even admissible. He'd have to weigh what's called the probative value, the value to the jury, versus the prejudicial value, how bad that makes him look. You know, the judge doesn't want him to be convicted merely because he ran away after this happened. He wants to be convicted if he wants a verdict to be reached on evidence that shows he was the actual person who perpetrated the crime.
You need actual facts. Okay, let me ask you to flip the table, because you are currently on the criminal defense side of things, but you're a former prosecutor. You're the prosecutor in this case. You know what we know publicly so far. What are your next two or three steps? Are you ordering DNA samples? What are you looking at? What are you trying to do in terms of putting the dots together?
It's interesting you bring up DNA, because they know each other, right? I mean, it's not like it's a who did it.
Well, they were intimately involved with each other, yes.
Yeah, exactly. They were living in the same van. So it's not like, okay, we're going to grab the van and see if her DNA is in there. Of course her DNA is going to be all over there. Her fingerprints are going to be all over there. Her hair fragments are going to be all over there. The real issue what the prosecutor's got to do is really hand things off to the law enforcement experts, the criminologists, the forensic people. They do the autopsy. If under her fingernails there it seems to be his skin fragments, his blood, if on her hand she has some sort of defensive wounds that have knife marks, then they could go to the van. Well, is there a knife in the van that matches this? You highly doubt it, but you never know. So it's really about the forensic experts who are going to dig deeper, and then they hand over that evidence to the prosecutors. You know, at this point, usually prosecutors don't have nearly as much to do with it as people would think. It's really still the law enforcement officers who are trying to conduct the investigation.
But if they bring it to you, you're going to be you're asking for all of that. You're saying, give me the best forensics up and down, every square centimeter of everything.
First, you just want enough to arrest him, but then you don't stop there. After the arrest is made, you want to make sure that you have all the evidence you can to present to a jury or to compel him to take a plea. And Kevin, I believe there's a death penalty in Wyoming, and depending on the circumstances around his death, you know, it's he could face the death penalty. The real question I have for you, Kevin, is if hypothetically, tremendously hypothetically, one of your children comes home and they're 23 years old and says, "Dad, I snapped, something horrible happened, and I killed somebody." What do you do, Kevin? You hand your child over to law enforcement, or you give them the opportunity to run for their life, so to speak?
That's a Sophie's choice. Every dad listening is hoping that they never have to face that. And I don't know. You know, I have thought about those things before. I think what it generally drives me to do is pray for my kids a lot harder than I ever have.
I hear you. Believe me,
I don't want to face that. But, you know, I'm sure that you have. And I'm curious if there is a degree to which if the parents help him get away, does that become criminally associative at some point? Do they become an enabler of the crime and even chargeable depending on what evidence ends up turning up?
We don't know what they've been told, but as far as we're told, he's not a person. He's not wanted. There's
right.
no
he's
arrest
a person
warrant
of interest.
For him.
Right.
That's not enough. So he's a person of interest. He could technically get on a plane and he could go to Japan. He could go to Australia. There's nothing stopping him. There's no detention warrant or arrest warrant or anything like that.
I kind of think we're going to find him in Alaska or somewhere. That's where I just like, I don't know that we're going to see him anytime soon. And certainly they thought they had him in the swamp, and it's now looking like that wasn't the case. We're going to talk about this and a couple of other cases a little bit more. Plus, Arthur's got Esquire Etiquette tonight, a legal tip for you just to make your life better in the legal arena. Because that's what this show is all about, right? And if you want to get the podcast, don't forget, we've got it now, not just at Apple and at SoundCloud, but we're also on Audible, Amazon Music, Spotify, and iHeart. All six of the biggest aggregators. You can get Radio Night Live with Arthur Idala on Thursdays and Kevin McCullough, as always. Coming right back. Stay with us.
It's Dr. Lederman talking about prostate cancer.
Your PSA went from 3 to 4 to 6.
Correct.
And then all of a sudden it jumped to 60.
It was a shock to me. That's when I called Radiosurgery New York. Your office is a whole nother world. You immediately took this whole thing into your own hands, beyond efficient.
Did you ever have a doubt that we weren't working for your benefit?
Not for one second.
And you knew that you had a cancer of the prostate that was aggressive and went to lymph nodes. And we put together a plan to try to get this terrible cancer under control, right?
It was just like you say, no pain, no cutting, no bleeding. It was so easy. No side effects, no nothing. Just perfect.
What was your PSA this week?
0.02.
Wow. For more prostate cancer information, call Dr. Lederman. 2 and 2 choices, 2 and 2 choices. Most insurances, Medicare, Medicaid accepted. 1384 Broadway.
Today's job market is full of demand for skilled trade workers. Electricians, welders, mechanics, these and other trades are the backbone of every community. They're also a huge part in making sure the Army National Guard is always fulfilling its mission of service to our country and communities. Soldiers train to keep the power flowing, engines running, and supplies moving. The skilled trades these soldiers perform are the same ones needed in today's civilian workforce. Army National Guard soldiers are on the fast track to learning skills that can set them up for success at home with companies looking to hire the best. With options from plumber to helicopter mechanic and everything in between, soldiers are able to select the trades that best fit their lives. Their resumes are being built through their paid training and part-time service. Find out how you too can learn a trade profession and serve your community and country by visiting NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the New Jersey Army National Guard. Aired by the New Jersey Broadcasters Association and this station.
Listen to us online at AM970TheAnswer.com. Tune in, iHeart, Alexa, or Odyssey.com.
Listen to us anywhere. TuneIn.com, iHeartRadio.com. Get the app at AM970TheAnswer.com.
Back to Kevin McCullough and Radio Night Live. From New York.
Well, we've got a number of things that we're going to discuss with Arthur Idala tonight, but I want to stick on the Gabby Petito bit for just a bit longer. And Arthur, as always, we're grateful for your time on these Thursday visits. There's a big story that ran in the Post, I think it was 2 days ago, where people that are observing what happened in Utah are really coming down hard on the police department's handling of the domestic dispute. In fact, one of the things that they are saying is just unacceptable is the fact that they drove Brian Laundrie basically to a hotel room and said, here, we're going to put you up and give you like kind of deluxe accommodations. And they made Gabby, the single girl, you know, all 110 pounds of her, stay in the van. Now, of course, she's driving across the country in a van and she's Instagramming it and doing all this other weird stuff. But what's your feeling about did the Moab City Police Department miss something that could have saved her life, or do you think it was just beyond knowing anything at that point?
When you watch the video, they spend so much time focusing on this, and obviously they don't know that a homicide's about to occur. I was thinking, boy, I guess there's not a lot of crime going on over there if they get so much time to spend on a relatively simple domestic violence issue. I mean, yes, she's crying, but, you know, nobody's cut, nobody's bleeding. I think he had some scratch marks on him. But one of her complaints was that she was afraid he was going to leave with the van. So hence, they kept her in the van. I believe also the van is registered to her. So it would be weird for them to give him her van that's registered to him. So I don't think, I mean, I read the official statement from the police department. They're just making sure all protocols were followed, et cetera, et cetera. They don't see any wrongdoing right now, but they're just conducting an investigation to make sure everything that was done properly. To me, as a civilian, it looks like they did everything in the right way. They protected her. I mean, look, she was very upset. But if you watch the video, she takes all the blame. She's like, I have OCD. I have anxiety. I get nervous. I. And he's the one with the marks on him. It didn't appear that she had any marks on her. So that's I think that they're in the way crazy cover your butt zone. But that's what they're doing. And that's kind of the world we live in now. It's like, don't worry about doing the right thing. Just worry about, you know, making sure you don't get in trouble while you're doing what you need to do.
Sometimes there are outside forces that get involved in these cases. And America's Most Wanted, John Walsh, has been just talking up a storm. All kinds of opinions coming out of him. He's putting up, I forget how much money it is, but he believes the public will be the ones that ultimately find him. Is that helpful? Is that generally helpful in getting to the bottom of cases, or is it sometimes more noise and distraction than actual substance?
I mean, I have been involved in cases where it's been helpful, where the family has put out there, you know, a major reward, $10,000 reward for a perpetrator of a homicide. And in fact, they did. A person came forward and was helpful, and someone was arrested and prosecuted and went to prison for 25 or 23, I think, to life. And that witness got $10,000 from the family. So, I mean, there are occasions when it's helpful. I think for the most part, look, it's a good effort. I don't think when you're still figuring out what's going on in a homicide case, I don't think having more continued interest and continued publicity hurts. So I think it's probably a good thing. And that's, as you said, Joy Reid said something. I don't know if you want to segue into it.
That's the next thing I was going to ask you about.
That's what's frustrating for other families whose, you know, their family members have gone missing. Their, you know, two people in their family have gone missing, and they can't get any traction in getting the public aware. And I went on some website and they're like, oh, the 10 most famous disappearance cases, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know, either 7 or 8 were attractive blonde women.
Yeah.
One was the little boy, Eaton Pates, who was here from New York City. He's an adorable little 6-year-old. And then there were two brunettes. And I could understand, you know, if it's my son who, forget about the color of someone's skin. If it's my son who a similar situation happened, him and his buddy went, the buddy came back and my son's gone, and I can't get it on the cover of the New York Post. I can't get it on the lead story on Facebook and Google. I could see, you know, the pain that people feel about, you know, just certain, look, she was a very attractive young lady, Miss Petito. And, you know, God bless her family. I mean, my heart bleeds for them, but at least they have some form of closure. There are a lot of people, Kevin, who, you know, they
never do. Yeah.
Family leaves the house and they never hear from them again.
Well,
what did Joy say? What was the Joy Reid issue?
Well, she said basically it's the syndrome of blonde white women disappearing. And someone else coined a much wittier version of it back in the day that Greta Van Susteren basically built a whole career off of. But they call it the Natalie Holloway syndrome.
Yeah.
Because case went on for
Vandersloot. You're on
2 years or something like that. Yeah. Okay, when we come back, I do. And he was guilty of sin. Anyway, when we come back, a couple of other big cases, and then we'll get into some Esquire etiquette for your own benefit tonight, because we want you to have some legal arming for yourself to know how to handle things when you go through rough times. And we're with Arthur Idala. It's Radio Night Live.
United States has killed Osama bin Laden.
Hours after that announcement, the White House leaked that it was SEAL Team 6 that carried out the operation. Al-Qaeda placed bounties on the heads of all Navy SEALs. Then, just 3 months later...
Extortion 17 requesting permission to take off.
A U.S. Army helicopter carrying many from SEAL Team 6 and others entered the Tagi Valley.
I saw a flash. You seen a flash? Anybody out there? We have a fallen angel. A fallen angel. Roger.
Extortion 17, the provocative new film telling the story of the largest loss of life in U.S. Special Forces history. Now playing on SalemNow.com. Questions quickly arise. Why did it take 17 minutes to fly a 10-minute mission? Was there a black box on board?
Every American should be taught about what happened in Extortion 17.
What really happened to SEAL Team 6 that dreadful night? Fallen Angel, Extortion 17, the story most Americans don't know. Watch exclusively at SalemNow.com.
Hi, Kevin McCullough. Wish there was an easier way to navigate the world of real estate. If only there was a way to learn from the best. Well, now there is. Saturdays at 10, our very own Dottie Herman, vice chair of Douglas Elliman, gives you the inside track to what is hot in real estate. Stay one step ahead in today's seller's market as Dottie gives her tips on how to make it through the tricky waters. Doesn't matter if you're new to the game or a seasoned vet, you need to listen to Eye on Real Estate. Dottie and her team of experts will guide you as sellers and buyers to make sure you're getting the best value for your property. Whether you want to become a real estate agent or work within the business, there is no better person to learn from than the great Dottie Herman. Why? Because she is the best, period. So tune in, Eye on Real Estate, Saturdays at 10 on AM 970, The Answer. That's Eye on Real Estate, Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock on AM 970, The Answer.
Listen to us online at am970theanswer.com. Tune in, iHeart, Alexa, or Odyssey.com.
Mike Gallagher is watching a downward spiral.
He essentially said the buck stops with me and then blamed everybody else. It's Trump's fault. It's the Afghans' fault, Afghanistan people's fault. It's the Afghanistan military's fault. It's the weather. The dog ate his homework. My goodness, what a catastrophe. I don't know that we've ever seen a presidency collapse this soon.
The Mike Gallagher Show. Weekdays at 10 on AM 970. The Answer.
Hi, my name is Ryan Bourne.
And I'm Danica Bourne.
And we're the owners of South Coast Tax. We would like to thank our Lord for protecting us from evil. Psalm 91 states, He is my refuge and my fortress, for He will rescue us from every trap and protect us from deadly disease.
South Coast Tax are Christian-based tax accountants and attorneys who specialize in releasing bank levies, wage garnishments, and filing complex tax returns. We are the leaders in acceptance of offers and compromise with awesome results.
We are also a small firm who will treat you like family and not just a number.
Call us today at 1-800-TAX-1176 for a free consultation, and we'll take the time to explain all of the programs that you qualify for in order to allow you a fresh start.
In John 8:36, so if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. And one way we can achieve that is by being debt-free. So let us help you today. Call us at 1-800-TAX-1176, and together we can help achieve this goal by putting the IRS tax debt behind you for good. Again, that number is 1-800-TAX-1176.
Radio Night Live with Kevin McCullough, tonight at 7.
Everybody loves my baby, but my baby don't love nobody but me.
Back to Kevin McCullough, live from New York.
Okay, lest we only talk about things that are very far from shore here in New York City, here on Legal Night, Rikers Island is still in the news. It has been, it's really turned into quite a disaster in many respects. Arthur Idala, you're familiar with most of the players that are involved here. You're familiar with the debate and the discussion that's been going on for all these years. And we're hopeful to be supportive of the corrections officers and others that are trying to do the right thing there. Maybe we'll even do a special broadcast with them in the days to come. But give us your download on where the Rikers situation stands right now. And really, how does it impact what the city should be thinking about in terms of law enforcement and helping people that are in that in-between stage of being arrested, haven't yet gone to trial? May have committed very small, offenses, etc.
Well, I will tell you this from a very real point of view, because I do know a few folks in there right now. I actually know correction officers and inmates. It's bad, Kevin. Like, they're not just blowing it up in the newspaper because it's selling newspapers. the correction office, basically, Mayor de Blasio came up with this idea. We should close Rikers Island. Okay, it's in tremendous disrepair, so let's shut it down. He put this committee together. The committee was headed by the former chief of the Court of Appeals, which is the highest court in New York State. And they wrote this document and put it together, this report, and saying, yes, let's close Rikers Island. As soon as they came, and let's open some smaller jails in all five boroughs. Well, you know what it's like to open a jail in a borough, yeah, right?
That did not go over well.
Right. Neighbors are not exactly ecstatic to have a prison there. So now this is, I don't even know how many years ago that report came out. And basically after that report came out, okay, we're closing Rikers. It's like, well, we're not going to put any more money into the place. We're closing it down. Well, the correction officers, their working environment has been horrific. And, you know, when I called a guy who I know, a correction officer, to ask him to help me with a guy who's in, I was like, he hasn't gotten water in a day. He goes, neither do we. We don't even have access to, like, bottled water or anything like that. It's horrible in there for us. So then the actual correction officers are doing, like, a sick out or a sit out or whatever. So there's not enough correction officers to man the entire prison. And it's in really bad shape. And the safety of the correction officers are at risk. The safety of the inmates are at risk. It needs immediate attention. The union boss of the correction officers, he's blasting the mayor, saying he's not doing everything that he can or should be doing. And as Americans, as New Yorkers, look, these are people, as you said, they're innocent until proven guilty. We want to hold on to them because they've shown that they're not always sticking around. So, yes, you've lost your liberty, but that doesn't mean you have to lose your dignity. And it's an issue that needs to be addressed immediately and in a very powerful way. And I'm just hopeful that the mayor steps up and does it from a humanitarian point of view.
It's interesting because I don't hear Adams or Sliwa, either one, talking about Rikers directly. I hear them both talk about the general need to, you know, enforce law and protect from crime and that sort of thing. But the Rikers story itself is something that, and I'm just looking at the Post archives from today. There's, between yesterday and today, there's six new stories that they wrote about individual incidents all occurring there in the prison. And it really is a rather dismal place.
11 people have died, Kevin.
Yeah. Well, and the conditions there, I think, would lead to, if people are already depressed or they have some sort of like mental depression anyway, there's greater likelihood that bad things are going to continue to happen. But let me ask you this. I remember a number of years ago, I was with John Catsimatidis on a broadcast, and he said if he were mayor, and what he would do is, instead of the 160 million or billion or whatever it is to build the five jails in the five boroughs, take about a tenth of that, level what's currently there, and basically start from scratch. Build, you know, state-of-the-art rehab facilities, put counseling sources in there, give them other things that they need that they currently don't have, and really make it something that is secure, number one, so it protects them and it protects the public outside of there. But then it gives them a more humane and decent place to be instead of the kind of sewer pit that it's turned into.
Yeah, listen, it all sounds great. It's all beautiful on paper. It sounds great when you and I are sitting here and having a cup of coffee. But it's far from that. And, you know, it affects all of us. So one of the cases that I have right now of someone who's in there, like, there's all this paperwork I need to go over with him. Now, I'm supposed to go over. I found out right before the show, he's in quarantine now because someone around him got COVID.
Yeah.
So he can't do a video visit with us. He has court next Tuesday. They already told us he's not coming to court. How am I supposed to go over 1,000 pieces of paper with him and prepare for trial when I'm not allowed there? He's not allowed there. He's not allowed to even do a video call.
Yeah.
So it's not the way the system is supposed to work. And I hear you when you say Adams and Sliwa haven't talked about it. They better get on the horn and talk about it immediately because it needs to be addressed.
Well, and I think that with average New Yorkers, there's a lot of, and I don't mean to, you know, diss on our fellow citymen here, but I think there's a lot of, you know, they're bad guys. They if they had lived their lives a different way, they wouldn't be in there. And I think that's kind of how the average person feels about it. And I think that is not productive when you're talking, when you're seeing the kinds of problems they're having there now. These are human beings. We need to do something to keep both the officers and the inmates safe. And at the very least, and at best, give them, you know, a degree of security and understanding that, you know, nothing's bad's going to happen to them while they're in there.
And it's, you know, it's not just the individuals, it's how it affects their families. You know, I'm not even communicating with some of my individuals. So I'm talking to the wife, I'm talking to the son, I'm talking to the mother, the grandmother, and they're reading the newspapers. The kids are calling from prison and they're like, it's a hellhole in here. It's a hellhole in here. And, you know, look, I agree with you. People are in that position because somehow or another they got themselves in that position. It's not.
No, I'm not saying that's always the case. I'm saying that's how people generally think about it.
It's not supposed to be the Waldorf or the Plaza either.
Right.
But it's supposed to be some basic human conditions where, you know, they can function and live while they wait during this pandemic. Kevin, I can't tell you how delayed everything is. Yeah. I spoke to someone yesterday in the Brooklyn DA's office. In all of Brooklyn, there are two trials going on. Two. It's a county with 3 million people. There are two trials going on. You know how, if we say at that rate, you know how long it's going to take? A guy who gets arrested today will go to trial in 2030.
Wow. Wow. All right, I did not know that. When we come back, final segment, final few minutes, Arthur Idala with some Esquire etiquette for you and I tonight. And then tomorrow, I think we have a special night off because I think Syracuse is doing football. So just a heads up about the program tomorrow night. Kevin McCullough coming right back. Don't go away. Hi, Kevin McCullough. Wish there was an easier way to navigate the world of real estate. If only there was a way to learn from the best. Well, now there is. Saturdays at 10, our very own Dottie Herman, vice chair of Douglas Elliman, gives you the inside track to what is hot in real estate. Stay one step ahead in today's seller's market as Dottie gives her tips on how to make it through the tricky waters. Doesn't matter if you're new to the game or a seasoned vet, you need to listen to Eye on Real Estate. Dottie and her team of experts will guide you as sellers and buyers to make sure you're getting the best value for your property. Whether you want to become a real estate agent or work within the business, there is no better person to learn from than the great Dottie Herman. Why? Because she is the best. Period. So tune in, Eye on Real Estate, Saturdays at 10 on AM 970 The Answer. That's Eye on Real Estate, Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock on AM 970 The Answer.
The United States has killed Osama bin Laden.
Hours after that announcement, the White House leaked that it was SEAL Team 6 that carried out the operation. Al-Qaeda placed bounties on the heads of all Navy SEALs. Then, just 3 months later,
Extortion 17 requesting permission to take off.
A U.S. Army helicopter carrying many from SEAL Team 6 and others entered the Taguig Valley.
I saw a flash. You seen a flash? Anybody out there? We have a fallen angel. A fallen angel. Roger.
Extortion 17, the provocative new film telling the story of the largest loss of life in U.S. Special Forces history. Now playing on SalemNow.com. Questions quickly arise. Why did it take 17 minutes to fly a 10-minute mission? Was there a black box on board?
Every American should be taught about what happened in Extortion 17.
What really happened to SEAL Team 6 that dreadful night? Fallen Angel, Extortion 17, the story most Americans don't know. Watch exclusively at SalemNow.com. Dinesh D'Souza can teach you a thing or two.
They're just chanting death to America, but they seem friendly at the same time.
Where have we heard that before? Well, the first time I really heard it was during the hostage crisis. Remember? Jimmy Carter, in which this superpower, America, is just being humiliated day after day after day. Well, those days are here again.
The Dinesh D'Souza Podcast, available on SalemPodcastNetwork.com and everywhere podcasts are heard.
Listen to us online at AM970TheAnswer.com. Tune in, iHeart, Alexa, or Odyssey.com.
Dinesh D'Souza can teach you a thing or two.
They're just chanting death to America, but they seem friendly at the same time.
Where have we heard that before? Well, the first time I really heard it was during the hostage crisis. Remember? Jimmy Carter, in which this superpower, America, is just being humiliated day after day after day. Well, those days are here again.
The Dinesh D'Souza Podcast, available on SalemPodcastNetwork.com and everywhere podcasts are heard. Carl Jackson is next on AM 970, The Answer.
Yeah.
Once again, from New York, here's Radio Night Live and Kevin McCullough.
I was still just perusing those stories in the Post. One from today, one of the maintenance workers at Rikers, totally robbed by inmates. And they took his watch, his sneakers, his cigarettes. But that's one of the more tame stories. There's an inmate that hurled some sort of liquid substance at a councilman who was there to try to take a look around and, you know, see what he could see. And I'm hoping that he was trying to help the situation. But really tough stuff there. So the new mayor is going to have his hands full with the Rikers Island issue going forward. Arthur Idala is still with us. And, Arthur, this is the point in the show each week where people pull out their pen and paper and they sit very attentive at the edge of their seat, and they're saying, okay, what does Arthur have for us tonight by way of the Esquire etiquette? So here I have my notebook, I've got my pencil ready to go.
Well, and this is directed directly at you, Kevin, because we started off this show talking about what happened in Tennessee and talking about people's, you know, right to bear arms. I can tell you right now, in New York City especially, if you get caught with an illegal gun, there is an agreement. It's not a law, but you get 2 years in prison. So my point of legal etiquette is this. There are certain situations, like if you're a jeweler and you carry diamonds around, or you work in a store where there's a lot of cash being put in and out, you can go to one police plaza. You could call my law firm. We'll help you with the application. We'll take you down there and do it the right way. But don't be silly. I'm doing a case this Tuesday coming up where a guy has had a gun under his bed for 21 years. 21 years. Never took it out of the house. But they suspected him of being involved in drugs. They realized they were totally wrong. He had nothing to do with drugs, but they found the gun under his bed. And on Tuesday, I have to argue with a judge, please don't put this 40-year-old guy in jail who's never been in trouble in his life because right. of something he put under his bed 20 years ago. So when it comes to guns, if you want one, you need one, you better do it the right way, or the consequences here in New York City and the state of New York are very severe.
I heartily endorse that. We believe in law-abiding actions here at Radio Night Live. Arthur, always appreciate the insight, especially on the Petito case tonight. I know you've just been dying to talk about it some more. So
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you on Tuesday. God willing, in the waves. Well, hopefully there won't be too many waves.
We'll be circling the Statue of Liberty with all of our co-hosts and sponsors. It's going to be a great time. We'll sing God Bless America at some point. Should be a great night.
That's the plan. All right. Thanks so much, Kevin. It's always a pleasure to be on with you.
You got it. There he goes, Arthur Idala. Most in-demand attorney. Now he's off to the courtroom. He's got something else to do tonight and something tomorrow and five things the day after that. Kevin McCullough, we'll see you next time, which won't be until Monday night here because of the football game tomorrow night here on AM 970 at Syracuse and I think Liberty University. Liberty's undefeated. They may have the better record coming into the game. I don't think that'll be enough to get them past the Cuse, but we'll see. Anyway, Kevin McCullough, have a great night. We'll see you next time.
I'm the lover who's meant for you, and I'll be true. So what's the good of scheming? I know I must be dreaming, and I don't stand the guard.